Susan.
Hello there.
Hello. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
I'm delightful. I had to come back up to my apartment because the room downstairs was blasting music, and I was like, this isn't going to make for a good podcast.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy. I heard that you had to be a shark and get a snake out today. Where was the snake?
Holy shit. It was in our pool. We're having a lot of stuff going on over at my house now. We're getting a bunch of trees taken down that's on the county property, like ginormous trees. Like a crane's going to have to come in here to get the last tree out. And these workers were here today, and one of them said, don't go in your pool. And I said, why? Because there's a snake in there. And I'm like, what?
Wait, did you get it out with your bare hands?
No. Oh, no, no, no. So what I started to do, there's this little duck that's floating in the pool that's like a light. And the snake went on the duck because it's the only way it would not drown. It was smart enough to realize it needed to breathe. And that's the only way it was going to keep its head above the water.
Holy shit.
Yeah. So it's floating around on the duck. So at first I thought, well, I'll just pick up the duck and take it out of the pool.
With your hands?
No, I was just going to pick up the floaty part. I wasn't going to touch the snake, but I was petrified. So I go to pick up the duck float thing, and the snake just like dove into the water. So yeah, I'm not going after. I mean, I'm not going to go diving in after the snake. So I got our big long pole with the net and basically had to chase the damn thing around the pool for a couple minutes. Eventually the snake gets tired because dude's got to come up and breathe. And I finally scooped him up in the net. And then,
that's crazy that it could hold its breath that long.
Oh, I know. It is crazy. And then literally just basically threw him across the fence.
Damn. Yeah. All right. Well, that's an interesting morning.
Yeah. And it wouldn't have bothered me so much if it was one of those black garden snakes, because we back onto wood. So we get those a lot. Those are actually really good snakes you want to have around because they kill mice and stuff. But, this guy was really colorful. And so that kind of signaled to me, you're a little bit different than those other kinds.
Yeah. I'm not going to fuck around with this one. We're staying with a big pole.
No way. No way. So anyway, he's gone.
Well, before we get into the podcast and discussion, I do want to say for everyone listening and to you, we already have over 70 Inner Circle members signed up and confirmed for the next retreat.
75 as of today.
Wow. All right. Yeah. 75. And this is crazy because the first retreat we had about 45 members come, and yep, it was amazing. It was incredible. And we knew just from how well it went and how extraordinary it was and how fun it was that it was going to go nuts. And just based on the cap that we have to limit it at, based on the venue, we could only limit it. We could only allow it 100 people. So Inner Circle members, if you're listening, there's 25 spots left. And if you're not an Inner Circle member and you've been thinking about it and you want to go to the retreat, hurry up, because it's barely September and we only have 25 spots left.
Yeah. And I think they're going to go really fast. I don't think we're going to have any spots as we approach next year. So I think it's really important, if you're thinking about joining the Inner Circle, hop on board and sign up for the retreat, get in there. And if you guys that are from the Inner Circle that are listening, like Jordan said, hop on this now, because the spots probably just won't be there.
And just like for everyone listening, just so you know, number one, we don't promote it at all. Like, we're not hard selling. We're not like Instagrammers, like influencers, like, come on, buy this. It's like, we literally opened up registration several days ago, like within the last few days. And it's already, it's just popped off so quickly. So the reason we're saying this is because we mean it. If this lasts another week or so, I'll be very surprised if the rest of the 25 aren't gone by then. So
I would agree 100%.
With that said, Susanne Bergall, everyone, by the way, that's just a joke. Some people look at Susan's Instagram and because it's Susan Niebergall Fitness, and some people, they read it in one word, like, oh, Susanne Bergall. Okay.
they don't know where the first name ends and the last name starts.
It's actually funny though, because since you told me that, that's how I've been reading your Instagram handle. It's like, that's just how I read it.
And so, literally, every day I get DMs and someone addresses me as Susanne every single day.
That's so funny. I always get Syed. Hey Syed, what do you think? Hey, I'm like, you could. I mean, all right, whatever. Like,
yeah.
If that's what you want to call me, we'll just go with that. So I know we had a couple things in mind. Did you like want to start off with anything specifically for this podcast that you want to jump into?
Well, one thing that we hadn't really even spoken about yet, that just literally popped into my head, which is really, really fascinating, because kind of hopping on all of the menopause podcasts that you have done and that I have done. One thing that I was talking to somebody about, literally, that I have realized in the last couple of months for me, back when I was in my 40s, I was being shuffled from one doctor to the next with what they thought was heart issues, which started with typical tingling on the left side on my arm and some vertigo and just some weird feelings. So I went, and right away they go to the heart, right? They go right to the heart. Got checked out. Anyway, long story short, this long trail of months and months and months of doctors. And I look back on that now, and not one of them ever mentioned menopause, not one. And I look back and think, holy shit, I'll bet you that's what it was, you know? And it's just.
And have you heard other people say the same thing?
Yeah, similar symptoms. Absolutely. Over the last year, a lot more talk is coming out, which is fantastic. But I have heard all of those symptoms that I had could be attributed to menopause, every single one of them. And I had specialists, when I would go see a neurologist, she would say, why are you even here? I'm like, because they told me to come. You know, I have no idea. I wish I could tell
you. Trust me, it's not my choice to be here. They fucking told me to come here.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I don't want to be here.
I mean, right. But it's so interesting how that has surfaced. And I did keep a log of my symptoms back then. And I am in the process of trying to find that, because I literally dated. I kept like a diary of what was happening, because at some point along these symptoms, I remember thinking, holy shit, I'm dying. Like, what the fuck is wrong with me? My heart's giving out, or maybe I'm getting MS, or what is going on? No one can find out. Is it cancer? You know, who knows? And not one person ever mentioned menopause. And I was right at that. I mean, that was during that time that all of that probably was happening anyway.
You know, what's really interesting is, you know, those commercials that have like for different medications or whatever. And then they, at the very end, the dude who can speak outrageously fast lists all the symptoms of like the side effects. He's like cold, runny nose, flu, headache, diarrhea, vomiting, all this stuff. And it's like, the more people, and over the years, like the majority of people that I've worked with, the majority of people in the inner circle are like, it's mainly women. And I've spoken with a lot of women going through menopause, and the number of symptoms and side effects that I've heard are it's ever growing. And I think it's one of the things where that's one of the reasons why I'm glad that we're starting to talk about it. You and me and Kim and Colin and all these people are talking about it, is because it's one of those things that's not very it's not discussed very much. And I think I was actually wondering why. I really don't think it's something that people are afraid to talk about. I think it's just something that it's almost out of sight, out of mind, until you get to that point in your life. And just looking at social media, it's like most people on social media are not at that age. I think they're about to get there, or they're getting there now.
Yeah.
But it's like, when social media really came out, like Facebook and all this stuff, it was mostly 20-year-olds, 22-year-olds, 24. And then as time has gone on, now people have started to go through it. I think now we're going to start seeing more and more of it. But I really think one of the best things about talking about it more is people will start to realize, oh, like this could just be that. Like that could be the reason for whatever these symptoms are. And hearing these podcasts and hearing these real life accounts, it just goes to show there's so many possible symptoms that come from it. And I think it's very beneficial.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's a really relevant point about social media too. I think that's a big player. And as a result, I think that's exactly what we're seeing. We're hearing about it more now than we did before. And I'm sure that will continue even more and more and more, which is great. Because, when I was going through all this, I and I will say that at the end of all this, the last test I actually had to go through was one of these inner ear tests where really bizarre, where they put like cold water or something in your ear and they hang you upside down. I mean, it's really strange, but they're testing your inner ear and balance and stuff.
For vertigo?
Yeah. And yeah. they came up with that my left inner ear has had a little bit of damage. And so it was nothing like outlandish, but they kind of felt like, oh, okay, well, here's something. Okay, so this was it then. And my ENT, I remember his face. He was kind of going, well, I guess that's it. He didn't really believe it either. I think they just wanted to close it up.
And yeah, they're like, we don't know. So yeah, this is a little bit maybe off. So we're just going to jump on this one.
Yeah, yeah. So at the time, that was my relief. At least I wasn't going to die.
Right.
Because I didn't know. But yeah, that just came up in a discussion I had with a woman on the phone the other day. We were kind of comparing symptoms and notes and stuff. And so that whole thing, I'm starting to write as I'm writing this book. I am in this part of my life right now. And it's really relevant in my head. And how funny how that was like 10 years ago, I think, when all that went down, maybe even about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit more, and how that's now so relevant right now.
Yeah. Well, that's amazing. Thank you for bringing that up. I think that's super important to know. And one thing I know that you also wanted to talk about was like fear-based decision-making.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, gosh, I've been talking a lot about that with people recently.
So go off. Let's discuss it. I want to hear like more what you have to say about it, and we'll like have a discussion on it.
You know, the one commonality I hear from people is the fear of gaining fat because they're not working out enough. So invariably, when I talk to somebody on a consult call and we start talking about training, they say, yes, I work out 6-7 days a week, man. I just love it. And we start digging deeper, and I can relate to everything they say, because I was that person as well, where yes, they kind of like it, but they also are fearful of changing any of it, because they're fear of not making progress, or they're going to get fat, or they'll lose whatever progress that they had gained. So where they kind of in the back of their heads maybe know that, and they're kind of squashing that piece down, they're still continuing to this same pattern because they're afraid to change it.
Yeah, it's so interesting. I know you and I have spoken about that before, where it's like when you're making decisions out of fear, it's a very different mental process and emotional process than if you're making them out of love or excitement or joy or whatever. And I think it's one of the concepts, for example, when people say things like, you shouldn't train for fat loss, you should train for strength. I disagree with how they're phrasing it, but I think that the benefits of the consequences of that are remarkable. I disagree with it in terms of saying I don't think you should ever tell anyone what their goal should be.
Right.
So if someone wants to lose fat, then they can want to lose fat. But I think that when people start focusing on getting stronger, and when they start focusing on gaining strength, and they start doing something for the positive effect, when they do it out of excitement and joy and chasing a goal, it's a very different emotional process and outcome versus when they're doing something to avoid something, when they're exercising to avoid gaining weight, when they're eating to avoid gaining weight, when they're doing everything to avoid something versus when they're actively doing something to achieve something. And
yeah.
I think that's what's going on. I support that message. I think the phrasing and wording can be different, but the overarching idea of when you are chasing something to achieve, making sure that you're doing it out of something that you're looking to actually accomplish a goal rather than consistently trying to avoid a negative outcome.
Oh yeah. And the confidence you get when you pursue it that way, that's a whole different level of stuff too, which will translate into everything that you do. So if your goal is to get that first chin up and you're pursuing working out because you want to get that first chin up, total different mindset and how you're going to feel about yourself rather than going out of fear and avoiding everything.
Yeah, it's one of those things that I very much believe people ask like if I think they should compete in a powerlifting competition or something. And it's one of the reasons why I think once you enter into a competition of some sort, your entire training and nutrition takes on a whole new level of intensity. And I remember like a lot of people talk to me about being in a rut or not being motivated. And there are a lot of different ways to increase motivation and a lot of ways to like sort of get it. I don't mean motivation starting from nothing. I mean, maybe someone who's been training for years and years and years and they're just like, oh, they're bored of it. It's dull. I think there's a lot of ways to sort of crank up the motivation and get back into it. But one of them is to put yourself on the line, like train for something.
Yeah.
And it could be as simple as going for your first chin up. I think after a certain point, obviously, like if you can already do your first chin-up, maybe if you can do five, or maybe you're like Susanne Bergall and you could do 10 with weight around like 25 pounds around your waist, whatever it is, like you need a new goal. And sometimes whether it's entering into a powerlifting competition, or for me personally, like I literally just signed up for my first Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu competition. And there's always by putting yourself, or another one is a lot of people have been like, well, sign yourself up for a photo shoot, like set a date. You're going to do photo shoot on this date, like finding ways to have a date by which you have a goal to accomplish can really like light a fire under your ass.
Oh, absolutely. It can. And it, and you can apply that to anything in life, really. It, working out or anything, you know, starting a business or getting something related to that. Absolutely. I think that's helped me tremendously, is hard deadlines for something like that.
How have you dealt with fear-based decision making?
I have gotten so much better with that. That fear used to drive everything for me. Fear, the working out, the obsessing over working out, and the nutrition piece too. I was relaying this story recently about when I worked at the school and how our office celebrated each other's birthdays, and I would never partake of the cupcakes or the cake or whatever. I would never, ever, ever have anything that anybody brought in. I would always be there to celebrate and do my part, but I would never eat that. And people kept telling me, wow, Susan, you're so disciplined. I wish I could do that. And inside I'm thinking, wow, I wish I could be like you and have a cupcake, you know?
That's such an interesting point. It's a very, very, very interesting point that a lot of people, I think this is overlooked in terms of, actually, I just got a message several hours ago from a young woman who, she has a pretty large audience on Instagram. She's like a very pretty young woman. And I was looking through her feed and she everything she puts out is like unbelievable confidence. Like I'm confident and strong and beautiful and da-da-da, and like trying to sort of motivate other people to do the same, which I think is great. But the message that she sent me was, I just watched your binge eating video, like how you overcame it, and then your instructions for how other people can overcome it. I watched that several weeks ago, and ever since then, like it's completely stopped. And it was something I struggled with my whole life. I had disordered eating habits. So thank you so much. But I'm thinking the whole time, aside from, wow, it's amazing, it's this individual who's putting out all this stuff about being confident and strong and love yourself and all this stuff, behind the scenes is going through all of this difficulty and this fear and this anxiety. And in the case of your story, where people are like, wow, you're so disciplined, in your mind you're thinking like, I wish I could be like you. Like you have no idea what other people are thinking or what they're struggling with. And this is one of the issues that I see in a lot of society these days, with a lot of people being like, oh, like, well, you're like, you have like whatever it is. Like I've seen a lot of people talking about thin privilege, and that's a whole separate topic. But people being like, it's a little bit reductionist and very presumptuous to assume someone is privileged in all aspects of their life simply because of their body, when in reality you don't know what's going on in their mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's like maybe they're that way because they have a mental illness.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. That's not really very privileged. Like maybe they're that way because every time they see food, they get anxiety. Maybe they're that way because when everyone else is enjoying the cupcakes, they're literally anxious and wish they could have it. But it creates a whole set of downstream effects that gives them anxiety and fear and worry that you never know. It's like just based on how someone looks, you don't know what's going on.
Yeah. I anytime I post a transformation picture of mine, I invariably get someone who will message me saying, well, your first picture doesn't look bad at all. So why are you putting that up there? And I'm like, you have no idea what I was feeling in that picture. I look at that picture and obviously maybe I see it different, not even from a physical standpoint, but I remember what I was living through at that time. And that's more of the transformation. And I talk about that, obviously, when I write about it. It's not just the physical part. That certainly has changed. And I was never classified as obese. I was not 100 pounds overweight, but I was overweight and I was completely miserable. So you don't know, you really don't know.
Yeah, it's such an interesting world we're living in. I see this also with sometimes people will post their transformation pics or pictures, or sometimes people will post up their own insecurities, like whatever it is. Like, well, I'm insecure of my cellulite, or I'm insecure of my roles, or whatever it is. And I'll see people in the comment section being like, you shouldn't be saying that because you're not actually overweight. Like, this is demeaning to someone who is overweight. And I'm thinking like, so only certain people are allowed to post about their insecurities now. Like,
yeah.
Someone else, just because of what their obesity status might be, they're not allowed to share their insecurities. Like, I don't understand. It's a very interesting world. And I see that coming out now more with like this political type environment, mm-hmm. coming into social media. And I see it sort of coming into fitness a lot too, where people are so judgmental towards other people. Here's the thing. I think it's starting from a good place. People have good intent, like they want people to feel welcome, but what's actually manifesting through it is creating a very divisive and like segregating community that's actually pushing people further and further apart.
Absolutely. And that piece, yeah, that's all in society everywhere with everything now. And I agree with you. I see it bleeding into the fitness industry a lot. And it's sad because I think everyone has their own idea of what people should feel like, if you look at a picture, like when I had that nutritionist, whoever she was, look at my picture and go down this list of shit that I obviously am doing by looking at a picture of me. And this has happened 3 times now where people have told me, this is what my trainer says about you. And I'm kind of like,
wait, like what?
Oh, I am taking all kinds of steroids. That's the only, which, as we know, is the funniest part of all of it. And that I look at a carb and just kind of gain weight. So I stay away from carbs. I eat very, very restrictive diet. I mean, all these assumptions, and these are from professionals and actually, a couple people from the inner circle actually reached out to me. One in particular who said someone at her gym said that about me. And I just find that interesting that there's so many judgments made from a picture.
You should make a post. Have you written about that on Instagram?
Yeah, I have, but not in a while. I did a whole response to the one nutritionist, and I actually, the person that reached out to me about it, I actually asked her for that person's contact information because I really wanted to talk to that person maybe on a podcast or just whatever. And she didn't feel comfortable giving me that information. So I haven't been able to do that. But I posted a response to that one. And actually somebody picked it up and put it in their blog because it was basically just counteracting every single point that she was making about me, and how she was just judging a book by its cover. She has no idea that I have obesity on both sides of my family and that there's heart disease there, that I have to fight that shit every single day, and how hard I've had to work,
funny. I mean,
don't get me started on the steroid thing, because that's just a whole nother comedy.
I'm going to keep getting you going on. I think it's so funny. One of the best things that you said to me, you're like, I don't even know where I would go to get steroids. Like, I thought that was so funny. I think you should make an Instagram post like with the title, The Truth About My Steroid Use, and like then be like, literally, like, get people like with a picture of you, transformation picture, the truth about my steroid use, and be like, I've had a lot of people asking and saying that, you know, I'm clearly on steroids, and the truth is, I don't even know where the fuck to go to get steroids.
Like, who do you call? I mean, I don't.
Where do you think I'm going to get? Like, are you out of your mind? Like, talk to me before you make these kinds of statements. Holy shit.
And my family thinks it's hilarious because they know how ignorant I am to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's a whole different world.
I am so ignorant, and I just don't even know how to address it. It's just ridiculous.
But you know what I think a great message of all this is, and I think that you of all people, I think, have inspired and impressed me the most with this, is through every stage of your journey, it, like, whether it's been with fitness, whether it's been with business, is no matter what people have said, you've always continued to go. Like, you've never let it stop you. And this is, it's the perfect example. It's the quintessence of, yes, there are societal pressures. There are people who will judge you. There are people who will say you're lying. There are people who will make fun of you, but it doesn't matter as long as you keep going. It's like, you've done that on every end of the spectrum with your fitness, with your business, with Instagram, with, like, everything. It's just, it's the perfect picture of, you can come up with all of the excuses and reasons not to do something. You can come up with all of the issues you're going to have, the struggles you're going to have, the reasons why you can't do it or shouldn't do it. But the reality is, if you want to, none of that matters as long as you just do it.
That's exactly what it is for all of this, you know, and it's way easier to just say, nah, it's not for me, or nah, calorie counting doesn't work for me, or nah, you know, I'm too old to be able to get shoulders or whatever. That's the easy way out, you know? I think people I don't want to say they underestimate it, but I think they don't realize that you can still do it. It takes work, though. You have to put in the time and the effort. You have to. And if you do that, you can literally do any single thing you want to do. You know, I'm a true believer in that.
Well, I think it's basically two very opposing views. And one of them is the easier one to take is the, well, I can't do it. And, like, you don't know me. I can't do it. You don't know my struggles. And I'll always be like, I don't know anything about you. I know nothing about your personal struggles. And I'm sure, like everybody, you've gone through a great deal. And maybe even gone through more than most people. But it doesn't change the fact that you can do it. Like, you can. You always can. There's always an example of somebody who's overcome outrageous odds to do it. Like, always. It's always there. And the cool thing about social media is there's more of those people than I think any of us, including myself, realize. Like, we see these inspirational stories coming out more and more and more of these people who've overcome the most unbelievable odds, who started from, like, way, 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 way back with like no money and terrible genetics and awful odds and going through terrible things, and they've achieved their goals. They've lost hundreds of pounds and they've completely transformed their body. It's one of the things that I'll always use that as an example with people who are like, oh, I just, like, nothing seems to work. Like, nothing can work. It's just my body is just not going to work. It's not going to happen for me. Or, like, along the lines of when they take a week off or a month off, or maybe they're like, I haven't worked out in a couple of years. Like, and I just feel like it's never going to happen. I'm like, there are people who literally spent their entire life massively overweight. They grew up in a house where health was not paid attention to. Maybe it was actively discouraged. Maybe they were smokers. Maybe they did hard drugs. Maybe they never worked out for a day in their life. They used to be 40, 50 years old, and they completely transform in a few years.
Yeah.
Like, you taking a week or a month or several years away is not an excuse. Like, don't play the victim card. Don't allow yourself to play that card. Like, don't allow that to happen, because when you do, that's when you lose.
Absolutely. I think that playing the victim card, yes, that's it. That's it, because I really feel like so many people do that. I did that. Oh, boy, did I do that. I was really good at that. So I understand that. But, gosh, get out of that mentality And I know, just like you said, I've been told by many people, you don't understand. Oh, no, I do understand. There's not a whole lot of advantages of me being the age that I am, but one of them is I've been around a long time and I have probably been through a lot of what I talk to people about. I've been through a lot of it. So I do understand. I understand very well and I understand how hard it is, but I do understand that you still can do it and that you have to work and that when you're on the other side of it, you will never look back.
I mean, that's exactly right. And one thing that I'll do when people say, well, you don't understand, I'll say, you're right. I don't understand. You, like, never mind, like, you don't know what I've been through in any sense. But I mean, like, I don't know you. I don't know you. I didn't grow up with you. I don't know, like, your family. I don't know your history. I don't know your struggles. Now what?
Yeah.
Like, what does that have to do with your effort? What does that have to do with your priorities? Like, and it doesn't mean, like, it doesn't mean you don't have other difficulties, whether it's, well, I don't have the money to go to a gym. What are you doing at home?
Yeah.
I don't have the resources to work out. Google.
Yeah.
It's like, I literally, my next video after this Big Mac one, I had this idea 2 days ago. I'm so excited about it. So do this 30 days on the Big Mac challenge. And then so a Big Mac is about $5 and then a medium drink is $1. So after 30 days, it's going to be about $180. So I think what I'm going to do is show people how to live healthy for 30 days on $180 in New York City, the most expensive city in the world.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah. And so basically it's like it's crazy how accessible all of this stuff is. And again, it doesn't mean it's easy. It doesn't mean it's simple. It doesn't mean someone doesn't have disadvantages or in a position of great adversity that they're going to have to overcome. But it's either you play the victim card and say, well, you don't know me, which you're right. I don't know you. Mm-hmm. Or you say, it doesn't matter if you know me or not because I'm going to fucking do it.
Yeah.
That's literally it. Like, okay, great. I don't know you. Nobody knows you. Now what?
Yeah.
What's the point of saying that?
That's such a great point. There is no point to say that. You know, it. Okay. So now what? Are you going to sit there and just spin that wheel? Or are you going to come over here and start taking action and doing something?
It's like, you're right. I don't know you. Next.
Next. Well, you know, it's like when I get people like that on the phone, a lot of times what I like to do is what we do with Inner Circle members and issuing them even short little stints of a challenge, 3 days, 2 days, 1 day, whatever, 7 days of whatever that they say they can't do. And say, okay, so for 3 days, I want you just to write down everything that you eat or maybe for 3 days, you're going to hit your workouts all the time or whatever it is for a short amount of time to show that they can do it. Something, you know, doable. And then they're like, oh yeah, I can do this. Can I? Yeah.
That
kind of can.
That's the magic of it. I was so happy. I saw someone commented on the Instagram post I put up a couple hours ago being like, could I do something like a challenge to maybe like to kickstart for like 30 days? And Marcy from the Inner Circle, I saw her respond to her comment being like, why don't you just start with a challenge for like 3 days? I was like, I love you, Marcy. You're amazing. Like, that's exactly it. And it's one of those things where when people use either the victim card or the excuse, whatever it is, you don't know me card, a lot of the times they just don't believe in themselves.
Yeah.
And it's like, them saying you don't know me is what's actually saying is I've been through a lot and that's why I don't believe in myself. And so it's not going to happen. But when you give them a challenge, instead of saying like, hey, do this for 3 months, hey, do this for 3 days, do this for 24 hours.
Yeah.
Then that's going to help them see, oh my God, I can do it.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. It's literally just that belief in themselves. It's so powerful.
It's so powerful. And then the 3 days becomes another 3 days. And then maybe it becomes a week. And, you know, I mean, it's so powerful. And it's so awesome to sit back and see, because the confidence that comes with that just steamrolls after that.
Yeah, it's crazy how, and that goes to show you it always goes back to action first.
Yeah.
Right. It's like, yep. When you take action, regardless of for how long it is, when you do something and then you see that you can do it, now it's going to give you more motivation to keep doing it. It's like people always in search of motivation or more knowledge. It's not people are a lot of times they're stuck in this pattern of not doing anything. And what they do is they always seek out more information, as if more information is going to help them, even though they're not doing anything.
Yeah.
I see a lot of these people, a lot of people email me about the Inner Circle. Like, you know, I've been wanting to join, but you know, I've done a lot of different programs before and it's not worked for me. And I'm afraid that it's just not going to work for me. And they're always surprised by my response. I'm like, I'm gonna be very honest with you. If you've joined a bunch of programs and none of them have worked, it's not the program's fault. And if the last thing I would want is for you to join the Inner Circle and then leave because you think it doesn't work, when in reality it's you just joined looking for something new and exciting and you didn't actually do it.
Yeah.
So if you want to join the Inner Circle or another program, whatever it is, do that. But only do it if you're really ready and willing and able to commit yourself to actually doing it, whether it's for a day or a week, it doesn't matter, but actually do it. I think too many people are Google searching and going to different programs and different coaches, always trying to find something new rather than actually just doing what they already know.
Yeah, they're always looking for the tip or the hack. I love that when I get asked, have any tips for weight loss? Excuse, what? Wait a minute. I have a whole page full of stuff.
I've got thousands of them on my Instagram.
that question never ceases to amaze me. Yeah, but people are always looking for the shortcut, I guess, is what it is, the easy way out.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's also, I think, just from an energy perspective, it's much more energy efficient to look for an answer than it is to act for the answer, if that makes sense. It's much more energy efficient to read and to learn than it is to actually put into practice what it is that you've now learned. It's because you don't have to change a habit in order to learn. You don't have to change what you're doing in order to read more. But to take that and then practically apply it, whether it's counting calories, eating more fruits and vegetables, eating more protein, now you have to change parts of your life.
Yeah.
It's much easier to read and learn and find than it is to say, all right, I'm no longer going to go to the pastry stand every morning. I'm now going to bring my breakfast with me. It's like, now I have to make a change. I have to get up a little bit earlier to make sure that I can make my food or whatever it is. It's like, that's what's more energy costly. And just from a humanistic perspective, like for like how we are as humans evolutionarily, we're always looking for the path of least resistance. And it's much easier to learn and read than it is to practice and apply.
Gosh, that is so, so, so true. Yeah. I think that's, you know, changing your life, parts of your life can feel very scary and uncomfortable, but yeah, hello, it has to be a little bit, you know? I guess that is the part where people just get stuck there. I think it brings us back to fear. You know, they're afraid of change or afraid of the amount of work or afraid their life is going to be ruined. You know, the whole thing, people are don't want to track calories because it's too obsessive. It'll take the joy out of eating. It will take, you know, it'll just ruin everything. And then when they do it, And they get better at it by practicing it, they find that's not what it is at all.
You know? It's so funny. Like as you were saying that, I was like, what's a good analogy to use for that? Because I feel like that's one of the things that you and I get all the time. Like, oh, yeah. I don't want to track my calories. It's going to take the joy out of eating. I'm thinking like, it's so interesting. Like, do you manage your finances? Does managing your finances take the joy out of your job?
Yeah.
Like maybe you don't like your job and that's a different story, but like managing your finances and managing your expenses is completely separate from being able to enjoy what you do for a living. Now, it doesn't mean that it's not going to affect each other. And I don't want to simplify it and be so reductionist in saying that counting your calories has no impact on how you view food. I think it absolutely has a huge impact on how you view food. But the issue is when some, and I'll also say this, some people do not do well with calorie counting. Some people shouldn't do it. It's important to say it's not for everybody, but I've never met somebody who did calorie counting, even if they did it and it wasn't a good fit for them. I never met someone who did it and regretted it.
Ever. Yeah, 100%.
Even the people, actually, even especially the people who are now all about like intuitive eating and like, well, don't count your calories. Blah, blah, blah. Like even them, like especially them, because they'll say, even though I don't really do calorie counting now, I'm glad that I did because it's allowed me to become a better intuitive eater. It's the same thing. It's literally just giving yourself more education and more knowledge in what you're putting in your body.
Yeah. And practicing it, you know, you're not going to be great at it out of the gate, probably, you know, give it a shot. And like you said, it's not for that particular thing. Is not for everybody, but boy, the education that you'll get from it. Yeah. Now you can apply that to something else.
It's so interesting how people, when they don't want to do something,
yeah,
they come up with so many reasons why they shouldn't do it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a very interesting phenomenon. And everyone's guilty of it, myself included. When I don't want to do something, I'll come up with reasons why I shouldn't do it. And I'm always trying to be consciously aware of that and being like, okay, am I trying to justify my lack of action because I don't want to do it? Or is there like legitimate reason for not doing it? And there is probably a little bit of both. But usually when I find myself trying to find a reason not to do something, it means I should fucking do it.
Amen to that. Boy, has that been a big change for me too. 100% yes. And I was queen of that. I would talk myself into or out of doing something because it deep down, it just made me feel uncomfortable. You know, I just didn't want to do it. So I would justify not doing something by going through some elaborate excuse.
And so I think this would be an interesting thing. Like I'll share one. And what's one thing what's one example of this for you that like that you didn't want to do that, like you knew you should do, but you kept trying not to do it?
I got two. One I did recently, stepping on the scale. Back when
that's a great
you were doing
one.
The whole Just Another Muggle challenge, and I wanted to support you and be part of that, and I didn't own a scale, so I had to go buy one. And I will say, I really don't care about the number on the scale, but I also started realizing that I hadn't been stepping on a scale in 30 years, and that the thought of it made me want to throw up. So I thought, well, first of all, I don't want to live with something hanging over my head like that. I think that's crazy. And so, yeah, that's why I decided, okay, I know I have to do it. It's not going to be fun at first at all, but I know I have to do it. And so, yeah, I did. And like I had said, that first probably week that I stepped on the scale and I was posting it on social media, that was another whole level of uncomfortable after that, you know, I thought I was going to throw up. I really did. It was awful. But like anything else, as you practice more and more something, you get better and better at it and you get more comfortable with it. And that's exactly what happened. So by week 2, 3, whatever it was, I started, dare I say, look forward to stepping on that scale and saying, okay, so what happened today? Let's see. I went out for dinner last night. What am I going to find? You know, that whole thing, it started taking on a different perspective, you know? And so that one was a big one. And then the one I'm doing right now is what you and I were talking about in the inner circle for the month of September, is picking one or two things for our members to work on from here to the end of the calendar year. And for me, it is kind of going into like a mini surplus here. And yeah, that's it. I'm struggling with that as we speak. So.
Well, that's actually a great thing. Like, what about that are you struggling with?
Well, I think it is the from the mindset of 30, 40 years of I'm trying to make the fucking scale go up. Are you kidding me? I've spent my whole life trying to keep it down and trying to go one direction. Now I am purposefully going the other way.
Yep.
And that. It's more of a mind fuck than it is anything else. And again, it's because it's been so long. It's been most of my life thinking one way. And so to break out of that, that's super hard. That doesn't come with doing this for a week and calling it a day and saying, I'm good. You know, I will probably not be comfortable with this for most of the time. But you and I have talked about how I'm going to, you know, implement this and just do it very conservatively and a little bit at a time. And I'm forcing myself to do this.
That's so interesting. And what you just said specifically about, I'm probably not going to be comfortable with this most of the time. It's like, that's a very powerful statement. And because so much of what we see on social media and people are telling us, you just have to, you should always enjoy it. You should just always enjoy it. It's like, just, no matter what, you should be happy and enjoy it. It's like, all right, motherfucker, that's impossible. Like,
right.
No one's happy all the time. Not everything we do is enjoyment. And even like, I love what I do and my job, but just because it's sort of like the saying, love what you do, you'll never work a day in your life. That's fucking bullshit. Like, just because you love what you do, it's probably actually going to mean that you're going to work even harder. That you're going to work. It's like, it doesn't mean that you don't get tired and that you don't get, there aren't struggles and difficulties. Same thing. Like when you're doing something that you have a goal you want to accomplish, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to enjoy it. And I think that what you just said is incredibly, incredibly insightful for people to hear, especially because for people who know in their gut, in their heart, and in their mind, they should probably stop trying to lose weight all the time. And they should probably stop being in a deficit all the time. And maybe they should even try being in a surplus. It's very important to hear. It's okay if you're not enjoying it all the time. In fact, if you did, it'd probably be a little bit odd and uncharacteristic. Like if you've spent the majority of your life trying to keep your scale down and go one direction, of course it's going to be very disconcerting to go the other. Sure. But that means that you should probably do it. And even if it's not, and especially if it's not comfortable, it doesn't mean you should quit. It just means have a set period of time. Have a guideline. Like this is something I was almost going to tweet it earlier. Maybe I'll do it when you get off the phone. But one thing that I've consistently been amazed by, both when I was competing in powerlifting and now that I'm doing more bodybuilding, is the importance of keeping track of your workouts and exactly how much weight you're lifting every session. Because if you're not keeping track of it, you're just guessing. You'll forget how much you lifted, and it creates a new level of intensity when you know exactly how much you lifted, you know exactly what moves you're doing, and you can go in and deliberately try and beat them week after week until you get the new program, and then you go after that again. It's when you have a set plan, you can go at it with a maximal level of intensity because you know when you're starting, when you're finishing, how you can improve. And I think when people just, they're like, oh, I'm going to go into a surplus now, it's like, for how long? What are your calories going to be at? When's the end date? Like, you should create a plan that you can follow consistently, like those bright lines that we talk about all the time. It's like, have the set plan that you have to follow, because when you do that, so much of the anxiety goes away.
Oh, that's exactly what it is for me. And it's interesting because we were talking about excuses. I was literally thinking in my head, making excuses as recently as last week. Like, do I really want to do this? Like, why am I really doing this? Blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, I was really going down that road and I caught myself right away saying, oh my God, listen, I mean, this is just another way of making an excuse to not do something that's making me that uncomfortable. So yeah, I'm all in. I'm going to give it a shot.
it's so interesting and funny. When you were just talking about that, like you were making excuses and like I literally make excuses to myself by the minute. Like I think we all do. But when we're doing that, we all have an internal dialogue, right? And we say that we're talking to ourselves, but it's almost like we're talking to another person in a sense. It's like when we have an internal dialogue, when you're saying like, well, do I really want to do this? And I was thinking, I was trying to think of a phrase to go with this, but I sort of just landed on yourself is lying to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. It's like, and it's a little bit odd English, but yourself, the person you're speaking to, yourself is lying to you. Like, yes, you do want to do this. This is the right thing to do. And even though yourself is trying to convince you to do otherwise, stand your ground. Like, speak to yourself and tell yourself that you know what you need to do. Your gut is telling you what to do. It's like, you sort of have like, you and then yourself, and you is probably what you feel in your gut and your heart, and yourself is sometimes in your mind. And it's like, you know, your gut knows the right move, but your mind, yourself might be like, but like there's this and there's that. And like, there, this could happen and that could happen.
Yeah.
Like, shut the fuck up yourself.
Yeah.
Like, my gut knows what the right move is. I'm going to listen to my gut. And then you just sort of have to help me along the way. You have to guide me logically, but I know what's the right move. It's a very interesting dynamic. I just sort of, I don't know if that sounded psychotic or not, but that's where my head went with that one.
No, but it's totally accurate. Totally accurate. But what is yours? What is yours?
Well, you're going to laugh at this one. And this is one that, you know, I've spoken about in the inner circle a little bit. And really the inner circle is the only place I've spoken about it, I think, is my sleep. Right. And this is one where that I, as a teenager, I never thought I would struggle with this. I was the teenager that could sleep for like 18 hours a day. Like, and it was totally fine. Then I'd get up and do sports and go back to bed. I could sleep forever. But as I've started and built a business, like, it's very easy for me, for myself, like the brain part of me to be like, okay, I should stay up. Like, I should stay up. I should get a little sleep. I should like get like an hour or two is all I need. I just need to get this work done. In my gut, I know like, hey, this is really fucking stupid. You need to get some sleep. Like, I know that, but like, uh-huh. I have that little argument where it's like, yeah, but like, yeah. You respond to those emails, but you also need to like get some content done. You also need to like edit the podcast, whatever it is. Like, and so I could feel myself having that argument, like with like me and myself.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's so interesting. So that's the one. And I create those justifications and excuses where I'm like, okay, yeah, but like, all right, so you'll catch up on it this weekend, or you'll catch up on the sleep, or, you know, you'll sleep in a little bit later tomorrow, whatever it is. And that's the one that I continue to struggle with to this day. And it really started when I started working with Gary and started coaching him 7 days a week, traveling mm-hmm. with him all over the world. And I was never in the same time zone for more than a few days. Like, that really sparked it, because then like it almost enabled it, because.
Oh, sure.
Because when you're never in the same time zone, you're going from New York to Hong Kong, to LA, to Sweden, to Germany, to Nashville within like 2 weeks. It's like, you don't know where the fuck you are. You don't know what time zone you're in. It's like, I might as well, like, I'm just going to stay up and do work. And it's like, or if like you're going to go to sleep, but it's like 2 in the afternoon, it's bright light out. It doesn't make any sense. So it enabled me to do that type of stuff without necessarily feeling so bad about it. But since I stopped coaching Gary, or took that 3 month sabbatical, now I am again, but since I took that 3 month sabbatical and I was more able to get on a regular schedule, I did exponentially better. Like, yeah. Exponentially better, way, way, way better. Not 100%, like nowhere near 100%. I'd say if I had to give it on a scale, I'd probably say if I was at zero, which like realistically I was probably at zero. If mm-hmm. I was at zero, I'd probably moved up to like 7.5.
Oh,
which is
yeah.
like huge, like amazing. Still a lot of room to improve.
You made big strides with that. Big, it was noticeable.
Yeah, you can see it and hear it in how I speak and everything, like the dark circles under my eyes. Even
yep.
like, you know where I think it's most noticeable is all of a sudden people are like, oh my God, like you look amazing, like you put on serious muscle. It's like, well, that what really helps with that is actually getting sleep. So now I'm actually motivated to go to the gym and lift heavy weight.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where people are like, do you think that sleep impacts fat loss or strength? Yes, it absolutely does. But the majority of it comes from, if you're not sleeping, you're probably not gonna be able to give a lot of effort in the gym. Or if you're not sleeping, maybe you're eating a fuck ton at night, like, and you're like not actually hitting your calories. That's really where I think a lot of it comes in.
Oh yeah, sleep is a weird scenario for me. Just in the last 3 years, it's kind of on again, off again. But I'll tell you what, the difference when I go to the gym after having a pretty decent night's sleep, and between that and when I don't, it's significant.
It's crazy. It really yeah. is. It really is. And I will say though, one of the things that with everything I've done, I'm able to find massive benefit to it. And I will say that going through a period of about 3 years with very, very little sleep, I really started to understand when I would work with clients and inner circle members who either have kids and like babies and they're not getting much sleep, or they mm-hmm. travel a ton and they're not getting much sleep, how to better program for them, which is why, like, one of the reasons I was so glad you and I created some of those manuals in the Inner Circle, some like the body weight training manuals mm-hmm. and the manuals that people can just use at home wherever they are, because that's, I started to use those when I, it's sort of what got me back into my fitness before I started getting really back in the gym, is at least I could do something no matter where I was. And so, but yeah, if I'm thinking of one thing, it's definitely the sleep, where I've improved dramatically, and I can still improve a little bit more.
That's amazing. Well, and you've done great. It's like I said, it's been really, really, really noticeable.
Yeah. I mean, I'm stoked about it. I'm like putting on muscle, getting stronger. I'm excited about it.
You look amazing.
Well, thank you, Suzanne Bergall. This has been a tremendous podcast. Susan, where can people find you on social media?
Instagram and YouTube is where I'm popping up the most. Susan Bergall Fitness, and Twitter as well. I've been out on Twitter quite a bit. So same thing, Susan Bergall Fitness everywhere.
Can you spell Susan Bergall Fitness?
I will. SusanNieBergall Fitness. There you go. Yeah.
Amazing. I love you, Susan. This was tremendous as always.
Well, I love you more.
I love you most. Have a wonderful day.
You too.
I'll talk to you soon, all right?
Okay, right. Love you. Bye.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.